At the Northfield Arts Guild, visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thanks for listening to the show. We celebrate creating in stories here, and hopefully we wake up your imagination a little bit this morning. I am going to talk a little bit about the idea. I've been thinking about conversations and the art of conversation. And, you know, when I prepare for interviews, I try to create a shape for the interview, try and give it a little bit of a ladder rings to hang on and a pathway for the conversation. But these ideas are really just guides of how I want, you know, folks to the story to unfold. It's a way for us to have a launching point into Art Zany. But during the conversation, I really need to be open to sidetracks and twists and ideas, and I have to know how to support the guests, their art, the events, and see the possibilities. I also try to be in tune with the audience, all of you listening, which are, you know, we can't have a show if we don't have you listening. And I try to consider, well, what might they be wondering? Is that word familiar to them? Do we need to ask about that? Are we helping them to illuminate the path? And, you know, I've been thinking about this art of conversation. And as I work to it every week on the radio for visiting artists and all of the folks that come into the Art Zany studio, I wonder how much of that I'm doing in my life, because I feel like I talk less and less about politics in my real life, because there's less and less opportunity for that real engagement where we're exchanging ideas, where we're listening to each other. It's easier to not do that. And so that's something that I've certainly been thinking of, especially as we come to Election Day, come to the holidays, we're getting together with families. How do we begin again to practice that art of conversation and being open to people and their ideas and looking at the world and through other people's eyes? And I wonder, you know, when was the last time you had a conversation where you someone changed your mind? If that's been too long, maybe you're not having enough good conversations. So I would think that I remember as a kid, there were always hot button issues and political talk and lots of things happening at the dinner table and during family and social events. And I think we need more of that in our world. And it's a little scary to think about, I have to say, because, you know, I don't like to be controversial. I don't, you know, I want to be a positive person, but there's a way to do that. And I hope that these Art Zany conversations give you a little bit of inspiration. And I am certain that today's conversation is going to be one of those. I'm so excited today. Today in the studio, we have artist Tufik. Have I said that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Okay, welcome to Art Zany Radio.
Thank you for having me.
It's such a pleasure. I'm so excited to have you. I think that you'll be a new voice for many of the folks in our listening audience. You're a multidisciplinary artist. Your work combines simultaneously photography, video, modeling, and performance art. But I love this part. You talk about the multiplicities of identity, and no matter what you're doing, you're always trying to help us see the world anew or in it from a different perspective, and always on the edge, right?
Always, but I try to do it the best way possible.
Exactly. And so if people want more information, you can go to Tufik, F-I-K, or not Tufik. F-I-K.
Exactly.
That's a very clever.
Not Tufik. Well, you know, I tried.
It's a very cool website. That's .com. But he's here because tonight at the Northfield Arts Guild is the High Heels Workshop.
Yeah, it's actually a performance more than a workshop, but the format is kind of original because it's really the creation of an art piece in front of the public. It's actually a military march of men in high heels. And I really want with this piece to question our capacity as men to feel vulnerable when we're in high heels. That is actually one of the least masculine accessory ever. Not that I believe it is the least masculine, but it's the most emasculating one. And as soon as a man wears high heels, it disappears as if he's just like is not a man anymore. And I question also the whole idea of physicality, the way we change our position, the way we move when we have high heels. And the thing is that women are pressured to wear high heels socially and professionally nearly every day. Mm-hmm. So I think that it would be interesting for men to go to walk certain, like a mile in her shoes, like you say.
Yes, right.
But I believe that beyond the idea of just wearing high heels, there is this idea of the representation of manhood that I think is pretty interesting in this.
Well, and I was intrigued in the description that what was listed was that you want men to explore masculinity. And sometimes people, when they think about men in high heels, they're looking at their feminine side. Mm-hmm. But actually, it truly is a way of thinking about what they carry with them as you know, that masculinity that that they're challenging that.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it's important for us to challenge the way we perceive gender, because I think that in a certain way, being afraid of high heels in a way is like being afraid of femininity. But there's nothing wrong with having a masculine and feminine part. We all have a masculine and feminine part in all of us. The thing is that I think embracing it allows us to be more comfortable with who we are. And also being afraid of anything feminine would sound to me a little bit like pure misogyny. Does that mean that anything that is remotely feminine is negative? I'm just asking the question. I don't believe this at all. I think it's the opposite. But in this case, we really need to push our way about, we think about our gender, about our representation, about how masculinity can be really toxic sometimes, and how it can be super fragile at the same time. While when we just accept who we are as men with our flaws, with our emotions are something that are perceived also as a flaw within manhood, mm-hmm. which I think is the opposite. We should be close to our emotions. So this really, this whole theme of gender, perception, image, yeah, are some things that really are dear to my work. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really exciting night. And I think you're inviting everyone to come to support.
Everybody's invited, yep.
Support folks. And if there are men who are saying, well, that sounds like an experiment I might want to do, is there still time to call the Arts Guild? And
they can just show up to the Arts Guild. We have a bunch of high heels. I did some shopping.
I heard that you bought a whole bunch. So
my reputation is done in Northfield. Yeah, I went to the store. Like, I want all the biggest size that you have. And it's just pick them all up.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah, those aren't easy to find. I have large feet as well, and it's something that just until recently they didn't have many in larger sizes, and now I feel like there's a little bit more availability, and it should be available for men and for women.
Well, and I also believe that there are women that have big feet, and I think it's important also to be able to give them shoes to wear. I think everybody has to have like some sense of fashion and style. And I think it's important to democratize the access to high heels. Well, mind you, I'm not talking about like six inch stilettos like the one that I have or something, but high heels in general. But my vision of high heels is a very, very particular one, because I'm really, really fascinated by the capacity of this object to change the way the body moves. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, because I heard too you have some kitten heels, just, you know, for folks.
Oh,
is
my
that
God,
true?
The kitten, no, I'm not a fan of kitten
You're
heels.
You're not a fan? Oh. What, tell me, I guess. tell me.
No, the thing is that the only time I tried kitten heels, I was just super frustrated because it felt like it was not a sneaker, but then it was not a high heel. It was like this middle ground in which I had some difficulties to walk in. Actually, I tripped many times in kitten heels, and I don't trip in
fascinating.
In super high heels, so yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, that's very interesting to me, because I would not wear those high heels. I never did and probably couldn't. So it's something that, you know, I could probably use some lessons on too. I think that, and I think it's really interesting how an object carries weight with it of whether that represents masculine, feminine, right? It's just a shoe.
Yeah, but the thing is that what's interesting is that the high heels in the beginning were made for men.
Oh, and this I didn't know.
That, oh, yeah, they were made for men initially. So men used to wear high heels in order to represent power. So the higher the high heel, the higher the power
up.
You had. So the thing is that after that, it transformed into an accessory that became a bit more feminine. And obviously, the design has changed to do so. But what I found interesting is that the high heel can be, for certain people, a very sexual accessory. Like, it can be a super empowering accessory, and it can be also a very objectifying accessory. So it depends who wears it and how you wear it. But what I find interesting is that I want, for me, the concept of a man wearing high heels is not a question about being more feminine. It's about being more vulnerable as a man.
So getting in touch with those, what does that feel like?
Exactly.
How does that make you?
Exactly.
And where do those feelings come from?
Exactly. And why are we afraid? Why are we ashamed? Why are we scared? Why are we vulnerable at this point when all we do is just, instead of standing on our own feet, we just stand in the front of our feet? And why is the walk changing that way? How come the shoulders move more? How come the hips are moving more, you know? How come, like, we have to tuck the stomach in, and how we have to put the shoulders back in order to stand? If not, we're just falling. And that's the thing that I find, because I found it absolutely fascinating in the physicality of it, but also the whole mental change that happens in this. I'm not at all aiming to have men after this being like, oh my God, okay, so from now on I'm going to wear high heels every day. Far from that. I that's not actually what I want. What I want is just this idea of this calm representation of secure manhood that actually includes also the vulnerability of wearing high heels and being like, oh, so that's how it feels like. Okay, and that's what I found interesting. I did this performance in Corpus Christi, Texas, in 2015, and it was pretty awesome. A lot of men that actually showed up were dads, and their kids and moms were like watching it, and I just think it's such a beautiful message to see, in a way, a father of three doing a military walk in high heels, and his sons and his daughters will be like, oh, that's cool.
Right.
He's able to do that. You know what I mean? And beyond even the idea of being like a husband or father, it's more the idea of a man being able to go through this and be like, okay.
Or maybe even just a human who has all of those sides.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Is expressing a different aspect than
totally,
what normally 100%. they put forth.
Yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah. But if I precise men in this case, it's because I think this, in this world where we just have this very binary world, and then you have obviously people that are defined as non-binary, but in this very binary world, I think it's important also to focus on this binary manhood that I think needs to be pushed around a little bit to evolve in a more secure manhood with the part of femininity, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, and in fact, I was listening to an interview where they were talking about our young men, you know, the generation who, you know, there's some challenges. I think we haven't dealt with how men grow up and what messages they're given. And the piece of advice he had for parents in this interview was to, you know, have your male child take care of something. Teach them about, you know, empathy, and maybe it's babysitting or a pet or, you know, some elderly relative, something that they have to engage in that part of themselves. So I think that comes from that idea of working with your emotions and acknowledging and then, you know, sharing that and being comfortable.
Yep, totally. And I think it's super interesting because it really seems as if all the feminine side is based on emotions, on heart, on motherhood, you know what I mean? Or all the manhood side is based on strength, on action, on thinking. And I think it's pretty kind of too radical. Can we just be a little bit more human?
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense in this world.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And when you think about the representation of women, it's super interesting because there is an artist that I love that called Anne Mourier, in New York, based in New York City, who actually has a lot of work about the representation of women and femininity. And we discuss, me and her, pretty often of this because we are both fascinated by the representation of women and femininity. And it's really something interesting because the representation of femininity is always very stereotypical. It's either this idea of the woman being a mother or the woman being someone more vulgar, more sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that a woman cannot be both at the same time, it's just pretty fascinating. I'm just always questioning how come it's either one or the other.
Or even powerful in the, you know, boardroom.
Exactly.
In the corporation.
That's the thing. But what I mean is that if a woman is a powerful in the corporation and doing her job, she can be described with some harsh words. Why, if a man is doing the same thing, he's seen as a leader. And I'm just always questioning this thing. Why is this double standard coming from? And I think that this is means in a certain way, we as men, and I totally include myself in it, even though I think I'm doing the work, but I think we as men have a role into making ourselves evolve in the way we perceive women, in the way we perceive womanhood, in the way we perceive women's body, in the way we perceive the space that we're in versus the space in which women are. And I think that this is something that we have to work on together. especially in this context, mm-hmm. in this late like years. So I think the work still have to be done. We have a lot of work to do, but hey, I'm doing it my own way.
Right. Well, and why not have art be the conduit for those conversations? And I think that if folks are just tuning in, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. I'm here with Tufik, and we're talking about this event, High Heels at the Northfield Arts Guild. This is tonight, Friday, the 2nd of November. You can get information at northfieldartsguild.org. And it starts at 5 o'clock. I don't think we gave the time, so we want people to know that. But you can join the procession at any point, because at 5 o'clock it'll be at the Arts Guild, 5:30 at the Public Library, and then it's going to end at the Carleton College White Center for Creativity, which is the closing reception for your exhibit, Gear Shifts.
Yeah.
So it's got a nice circle to it.
And, totally.
And there's a purpose to the march, right?
Yeah, totally. Well, because I think it was the the best way to finish my 3 weeks residency in Carleton was really to do this performance and also to bring people to see the last weekend of the exhibition, because Gear Shifts is an exhibition about, like the title says, it's about this idea of changing gears. For me, it's really based on the fact that as a human being, we're really way more complex than we look. And the thing is that there are several parts of us that can be asked and required in certain situations. For example, the way you and me right now are here while having this interview is going to be quite different, I'm pretty sure, than what we'll feel like being ourselves tomorrow, when we'll be like in our couches, be like, oh my God, I'm taking a rest finally. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or the way we present ourselves when we're with a family for a supper. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or the way we'll perceive ourselves and our body while we're like going on a date, for example. And that's what I find interesting. I think the people are way more complex than they look. And so we need to change gears regularly. And the idea for me is to have this, what I wish for people is, and what I try to work on about myself too, is to find this way of being comfortable with the different gears that we have, the different part of us that are needed for this situation or that debate or that family supper or that date. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And just try to find a way to be more wholesome and comfortable at the same time. And I think that with this wholesomeness and this comfort comes a certain sense of confidence. And with the sense of confidence comes the sense of being able to open up and to share. And with the ability to share, like you said earlier in the opening talk that you gave, really beautiful one, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I loved it. Super inspiring. I think this idea of talking, the idea of sharing, the idea of pushing each other into thinking more and being more open to agree and to disagree.
I think that's the key.
And that's the thing. And the thing is that seeing someone to tell you, well, you know what you say is wrong, instead of taking it as you're not good enough or what you say is idiot or what you say is dumb, is more being like, huh, okay, so in which part am I wrong? And just discuss, just push each other in the limits into thinking and learning, because in a way, in the end of the day, I think it's all about learning.
And I think it probably, if you have those opportunities that you can, you know, express yourself, you can be vulnerable with people, you know, and you can get to know people who aren't like you, and you can mm-hmm. try to understand them. I mean, I think we'll feel like we belong, right? Like we will be more connected, and it creates this, I think, a better environment to then move to that next stage of acceptance, and mm-hmm. you know, just really, I just think it would be a great place if that's where the world were, and it doesn't exist that way. It doesn't feel that way right now.
Clearly not, unfortunately. But I believe that what's happening right now, and I'm just giving my two cents in this case, is just that I believe that we're just now focusing on what separates us instead of focusing on what we have in common. And what I believe is that regardless of our gender, sexual orientation, body type, skin color, religion, number of language we speak, the amount of years in college, school that we did, or years that we worked, I think genuinely we all want to be accepted and at least appreciated for who we are. And that's something that for me is the most important thing. Like, I really don't care for who you vote, for what you do. The thing is that we both are human beings and we both deserve respect.
Right.
And it can sound a bit cheesy, but I really sincerely believe that. Is that focusing on what makes us human and the point that we have in common together has more impact on people's life and quality than focusing on what differentiates us. Because I think the way we perceive each other and what differentiates us, sorry about that, my English still have to be worked on, differentiates us is really this idea of context. Because what today is the focus or what separates you and me, for example, would be totally different 10 years from now or 10 years ago. The way we perceive each other is also based on how what we see around us and how people like you are defined by me or how people like me define you, vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's what I found pretty, in a way, pretty scary, is that we should not fall into this trap of just putting each other in boxes, like in pre-labeled boxes. That is just like a nightmare for me.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And that's, I hope that's what we do here on our show, is to try to illuminate some of those places and try to talk about, you know, how people take those ideas and show them, create conversations. I want to start and talk a little bit about when you were growing up around the dinner table. You mentioned that a couple times. I think that's such an important sort of check-in point of how you're engaging with those the closest to you. What was growing up at the dinner table like for you?
At the dinner table, what does this idiom mean?
Eating family meals.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know this one. I love it.
Oh,
okay.
Good.
Growing up at the dinner table, I like it. Okay. Consider that one stolen.
Okay.
I love it. What was it? Well, seriously, I cannot complain. I think I have a pretty amazing childhood. Well, I was born in France, from a Moroccan family. Both of my parents are Moroccan, Berbers, actually, which are the natives of North Africa.
Okay.
They're Muslim. So I grew up in France for several years, then went to Morocco. I always had a very loving and caring family. My youth is based on a lot of moving. I've moved a lot, so a lot of adaptation and observing where you are and try to adapt. Language also, started learning French first and then started learning Morocco when I got there. Then at school, I started learning English at school in Morocco and then went back to France and then moved to Canada. So there was a lot of moving.
If you are
confused, that's normal.
Yeah, and so what were the things that were... I just am fascinated by that idea of how people's upbringings and their, you know, ways that they engage with their family,
yeah,
helps open doors or close doors or, you know, create ways for them to engage in the world.
Oh, my God. In my case, what I think the most beautiful thing is that both of my parents actually stopped going to school pretty early. Like, my dad stopped school at 8.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the story is pretty rough. Like, it's literally my grandfather who just took my dad and my uncle and just dropped them at the store of one of his friends and said, okay, so now you big enough to go work. So literally stopped working at 8 years old. So yeah. And my mom got married pretty early. She got married at 14. So it's like, yeah, it's like this family that didn't go to school, but has a very, very, very interesting and avant-gardist type of approach when it comes to life and trust. So from the get-go, they were like, listen, Tufik, these are the limits that we give you. We trust you. You do you. Don't disappoint us. So that's how it worked. Which I think it was a pretty amazing approach, because that allowed me to do whatever I want. And if I was not respecting my parents' boundaries, it was on my own concept of shame of not respecting my parents.
The choices
that you
made.
Work.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, the little amount of argument that I got, it was like for really some dumb stuff that I did. AKA like doing jump rope in the apartment and just hitting like this whole like light bulb and just breaking everywhere. These are like things that kids do, so that's okay. But apart from that, no, I had a very loving and caring family and super open also. Open to the point of me showing them my work and us debating about how some works can be seen as offensive, disturbing, and how, because they're Muslim and I'm agnostic now, but and how we debate about how the religion is perceived by me and by them.
Mm-hmm.
They actually even participate actively to my art by buying me dresses and hijabs for my characters every time they...
So they supported every 100%. Expression that you had.
Yeah, totally.
I thought there might be something to that, and I think that matters.
Yeah, it does, because literally what it means is that I have this really deep confidence, because I know that the people that care the most about me as a people are the one that I can actually stand in front and say, hey, this is what I do artistically. You may not agree. You may find some artwork disturbing. But guess what? That's what I'm doing as an artist. So let's debate. And I think that if I'm able to stand up straight as an artist facing my parents, I think I can do it to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that literally what happens now with my parents is that I have the same thing that I'm talking earlier about. We can agree to disagree. But would you respect each other, and would you respect each other's point of view? So I think this is literally what's happening. And so, yeah, it becomes like a very, it can be kind of unreal in a way, because my mother wears a hijab and my dad went to the Hajj twice. So he's really a patriarch and respected in his community. While I'm kind of what I call the pink sheep of the family, which I think is a pretty cute way to say it. So I'm the pink sheep of the family, while I have a younger sister who's, I have an older brother who's 21. Oh, no, my brother is not 21, but my younger sister is 21. And she has shaved head and septums and super stylish and very good taste in fashion, while my brother is married with three kids, like the whole amazing dad. So we, all of us three are totally different. And when you see the whole family together, it's just like, okay, whoa, what's happening here?
But that's, I think that's the way family should be, right?
Exactly.
Because that means everybody's true to their individual, you know, whatever expression of themselves.
100%, 100%. Because what I found beautiful in my family is that each and every one of us is totally different. Yet we all have the same values. We all love each other for who we are. And clearly, every family is dysfunctional. So by definition, someone's going to say this to that. And there's going to be some drama here and there. So obviously, suppers are automatically scenes of like, big family drama. We love it. That's how it goes.
Right.
But in this case, I'd rather have this debates and this disagreement than not having any exchange at all.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes us a family.
And I think that's fascinating, and that also brings me to one of the things I read is that this isn't your first visit to Northfield or to Carleton.
Sorry,
yeah, and so one of the things you came early on was to talk about civil discourse on a diverse campus, and so I bet that you were that would have been an interesting conversation to hear how you helped people to, you know, open up and maybe guide some of those conversations. So what were some of the things that you taught then, and how have they, how are they working in what you're doing now?
Well, the thing is that what I find interesting is that most of the time people do not expect me to have a good relationship with my family because of my ethnicity and because of my because of my culture of origin.
That feels like an odd assumption. I don't know where that would come
from. Well, no, because technically the first thing that you'll think in general when you have this North African Muslim looking gay guy, the first thing you're like, oh my god, your family like don't like you, did they throw you out? That's one of the first reaction I got. So when I tell them, actually no, my parents are chill and yeah, we hang out and we have some fun, and sometimes my dad goes like, oh by the way, I went to the market and I found this dress and I think it's gonna fit you, so I put it aside for you, thanks dad. And there is nothing like remotely. Like, I think we literally try to work on every issue that we have. At least that's what I'm trying to do as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
So I really try not to have any, like, blurry zone, gray zone that can create any frustration. Because I think it's important to talk about topics that are disturbing and that can create real discordance.
Mm-hmm.
And in civil discourse, that's what I do. I'm trying, when I went to the class, I really try to push them into thinking about, in this case, we did an exercise that was super interesting about the representation of power.
Mm.
Because the thing is that back then, they had like all the portraits of the past presidents of Carlton's, and all of them were white males. And so we just asked about the representation of power. But from that started the whole debate about how come all of those presidents are white males. Well, I think it's just the history that made it that way. The history can change in the future. It's not a problem. But I think there is this way, I think, of looking at the past as if we should be either ashamed of it or we should erase it. You know what I mean? And just move on from what's happening
so
in the
present.
It's
so uncomfortable. Yeah, let's not. I don't want to go there.
But that's the thing. I think the past is actually what's going to help us to go into a better future.
Mm.
And I think that this idea of focusing only on what's happening today and seeing the future without looking at what's happened in the past and the mistake that we did in the past could be dangerous in a way. And I'm not talking automatically about the president. I'm going to the whole idea of the concept of looking at the past and how we'll see the future. Because technically speaking, I think that we'll learn from our mistakes. But to learn from our mistakes is to be able to turn around, look at it, and be like, okay, step one, step two, step three, step four. Oh, I did a mistake here. What was the mistake? What can I do better next time? There you go. This is how you evolve as a person.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I believe that sometimes we're just so focused on
going on to the future, I wanted to change the present, that I think I'm afraid sometimes we really should look back and be like, what is there a situation in the past that looks like what we're having right now? Okay, what was my reaction? Okay, so now I should change, I should do this. Try to catch ourselves on the patterns that we get. And I think we all have patterns because technically speaking it's so comfortable.
Well, and we may be able to look back and see ways that we responded that were shaped by things that we can change, right?
Exactly.
That crowd of people I was hanging out with, that probably was influenced me, and I'm really glad I separated from that. Now I can see it differently, or different ways of exploring what brought you to that that conclusion, and being open to maybe I can come up with a different one.
Yeah, and also just say, for example, you take a great example of, oh, I was with that clique, and that maybe I found myself doing this and this. I think it will also be interesting to see, oh, I was with these people, and I found myself doing this. Why did I need, that I felt the need to do this? Is it because I needed to be appreciated and accepted by this people? Or is it because I really wanted it? You know what I mean? Because I think this is important. It's also, why are you doing things?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a student recently that's asking the question, like, so how do you handle people facing your work and judging your work? I'm just like, well, that's the job of art, is to push people into their boundaries and to push them into thinking. So whether people like it or don't like my work, actually it's none of my power and I can do nothing about it.
And if you, yeah, right, that's really important for people to hear, because if you give that power, that changes what you do, and then you are just not being your individual true self. That's huge. Oh my gosh. Wow.
So the thing, and especially in my case, because it's pretty hilarious, because this is me talking about my art in which I appear every time. So people think that it's all about me, but it's not. And that's what I think, that that's what I love actually in my work, is that people see my art and they judge it. And I'm just listening to it as if they really would judge like a painting or like, I don't know, a car or
right,
a
it's
house.
Not you. It's a
not
representation.
Me. It's a representation of me. So people can judge, and that's okay. And I think, thank God, we can judge an artwork. You can be mad at the artwork. You can be disappointed. But never ask for the censorship. Never ask for the destruction of the artwork. Because this is something that I've been hearing for the last 5 years, maybe even more than that, when people are just like getting panicky about some artworks because it creates like some tensions between people, or it sends a certain message. Art is made to make you think. Art is made to make you react. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the purpose of the art is to make you a better person after. Whether you like the art or not is another topic. Like, I prefer to have two people arguing in front of my artwork, telling if it's like totally ridiculous or offensive, and I will join the discussion. I'll be happy to join them. Because I believe that the discussion that we'll have will take them to a space into looking at the identity another way.
And so isn't it great that they're willing to let that piece bring those points of view out?
Exactly, that's the thing. And I'm totally fine with people not loving it, not loving my work or loving it. That's fine. It created an emotion. So at this point, I'm happy already. There was another student on Tuesday, I think, yeah, who asked me. He said, "What are your biggest inspirations in art?" And funnily enough, I gave two artists that I liked, and I went into four artists that I hated. That's the thing. I say artists that I hated, but it's not the artists that I hate. It's the fact that some of their artwork for me are just like, wow, how can you do this? And in a way, I love them too, because they made me react. I can tell you the artwork, the year in which it was made, when I saw it. What else can you ask for?
And you responded to what it stirred up in you.
That's
and
it.
That's the only reason you were able to go to whatever it is, wherever you went with
there
it.
There you go. So, in a way, whether you like an artwork or not, it inspired you. And I think the word is the verb inspiring, or the adjective inspiring should be seen as positive and negative. There's nothing wrong with being inspired by something. They were like, ugh, I don't enjoy that. Yeah, well,
you don't enjoy it, but maybe it's going to bring some ideas to you later.
Fascinating. I knew we were going to have a good conversation. Now, folks, I want to remind you we're speaking with Tufik, and we're talking about the events happening tonight. High Heels at the Arts Guild. That's at 5 o'clock. Northfieldartsguild.org if you need more information about that. And then the closing reception at the White Center for Creativity at Carleton. And I want to send a special shout out to Stephanie Cox, who was the one who brought you to campus, connected us so we could have this conversation.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah, she's the Carleton College Senior Lecturer of the French Department and Cross Cultural Studies Department. And you are here as the artist in residence for the Center for Community and Civic Engagement.
Yep.
And you've been here for 3 weeks.
Yep.
So you've done all kinds of different events with not only here, but in the cities and different areas. And you've spent time, I'm hoping that you're having an enjoyable time.
A blast.
You are. Okay.
I am loving it. Northfield, thank you for being amazing.
Oh,
seriously,
good. I'm so glad.
I am having the time of my life. It's so funny. I love it. It's so fun. People are interesting, open-minded. The discussions that I had around tables at the bars with students, it's seriously, it's awesome. I'm actually fascinated, by the way, by the amount of creativity and community activities that you have in the city. There's like 21,000, 22,000
about that.
People. Yeah, good job, guys. Well, seriously.
That's what, because you're from, I forgot which.
From Montreal.
Huge city, right?
And it's pretty big compared to, compared to Montreal, it's pretty big. It's like it's 1.5 million on the island, but it's pretty big in general. So, yeah, but what I mean is that it's like, if I can even say it that way, like the art value per capita in Northfield is just like, whoa.
Wouldn't that be cool if we could measure that? Because I would think, that's part of the reason a lot of people choose to live here is because of that, because they want to be engaged in, letting people express themselves and find their passions and, try new things and see what happens.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Seriously, I actually arrived the day of the art tour, mid-October. And, I just went to visit and saw some ceramists, and it's just, it's amazing, like, the amount of artists that you have.
Right.
It's awesome.
And so you've been here working with students, working with doing some of these events, and I guess I'd just be curious about the how you set up these conversations and how you kind of keep people working together to create the event that allows these conversations to happen.
Wow. Seriously, you ask me an amazing question. I won't be able to answer it because I don't know. I'm just, what I try to do usually is that I just see who's in front of me and I'm just trying to adapt. I think that's how I see it. Because the hours and hours of discussions that I had. What's interesting is that people say, oh my God, thank you, Tufik. Discussing with you was such an interesting thing and I learned so much, but I learned too.
Mm.
Like, that's the thing. It's been like 3 weeks that I'm learning nonstop.
And that's important because I think curiosity is such a great quality to have in good conversation. Mm-hmm. Genuine curiosity.
Yeah, totally. And I think that there is something interesting in the idea of embracing and accepting the fact that you're like, okay, you know what? I don't have all the knowledge, but I have this knowledge. So let me share what I know and let me be open to actually take knowledge from people.
Mm.
And it's not because I show up here as an artist in residence and I give talks that I'm not going to learn anything. It's actually quite the opposite. So I'm happy every time I'm finishing, I'm like, hell yeah, I learned something. You know what I mean? I'm like, yay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is interesting is that for the whole day discussion that I had, because I had a talk at the library last week, and it was just awesome. Also, I had a whole discussion about breaking borders, thanks to art, and the different borders, like the borders of gender, the borders of image, the borders of geographical, how you can actually try to break all these preconceptions that we have about how we see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I did it was like through my art, obviously, some talks and some images and some performances that I shown, but the discussions that we had after was fascinating. And I think that this is the beauty of it. I think the curiosity and the capacity of sharing goes both ways. And I think that I'm kind of a genuine person. If I don't understand something, I'm like, what does that mean? There's nothing wrong with asking, what do you mean? Or I don't know this word. Or can you explain to me?
Yes.
And
yes.
That's the thing that's important. I think asking question is not a sign of being uneducated or ignorant.
asking a question is actually proof of intelligence, because you know the limits of things that you know and you don't know. So there's nothing wrong with asking a question. Far from that.
That's huge. And I think that I think that's something that we often go into those conversations with coworkers or family, or and we make assumptions, but we are afraid to delve in and sort of say, well, okay, so can you tell me? I don't quite, you know, to present yourself as someone open to hearing that. And sometimes for the person that's speaking, they may not even be, you know, they may be struggling with, because they're just so come to it with a preconceived stance, or and so you have to help them to feel like it's a comfortable place to exchange that.
Indeed, but I really believe that it comes with this idea of judgment. I think we're so afraid of being judged, we're so afraid of looking like fools, and I believe it's kind of sad, because whether, and that's what I say to the students, whatever you do, people are going to judge you. You know what I mean? Whatever you do, people are going to always, there will be someone who will be insecure and will be throwing something negative. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you have nothing to lose. So just be you. And yeah, let the rest do its job.
Because that's true. Yeah, even if it's a good judgment, it's still a judgment.
Exactly. But what I mean is that this idea is that it's really important for us to really dig deep into what we want, what we deserve, and what we're worth. And the thing is that, unfortunately, we're not pushed enough to think about this. We think about, we always think about showing what we're worth financially. We're pushed to show what we're worth socially or professionally. But humanly speaking, what is your value? How do you define your own value as a person, about the discussion you have, about the things that you hear and you don't take a stand into, this is acceptable, this is not acceptable for me. How do you define your value when it comes to the things you believe in and your principles? Because I when I'm saying this, I'm not even putting any link with religion or anything. It's just a question of your own core thing that you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
What makes you who you are as a person? And I think that we all deserve, and I think genuinely we're all interesting, and we all have something to learn from each other. But we can also have to be open into learning. But unfortunately, the thing is that sometimes people think that learning is being perceived as someone who does not know, as an ignorant. And I think this is the concept of learning. I'm learning nonstop. I've been learning for the last 3 weeks, and I think it's the most amazing thing ever. My brain is kind of fried, but I'm happy about it.
Right. Lifelong learning is certainly is something that I value. And if you have to know that things are you're gonna add to your ideas, you're gonna subtract some things, you're gonna keep that equation, you know, malleable, and you know, keep working on it. I want to ask you, because one thing I read was, it fascinated me, and I love this idea of power and play. That you really work on that within your work. And those are, I think, two things that if we could inject into our world a little bit more, we'd have some great conversations. Tell me how you came to put those as high values and expressions that you use within your work and conversations.
The thing is that I believe that the concept of power is taken a bit too seriously. And in a way too radical. I think we can talk about serious topic in a light manner. And I think that the concept of power can be displayed in so many ways. For example, I show up in a class. I'm invited by a teacher. By definition, if I'm in this class, I have a sort of a power because all the students are listening to me.
And you're likely sitting up front and everybody's looking at you.
Clearly, I'm sitting up front and I have a projection with a bunch of me in the photo 83 times. That was the maximum that I did as one artwork. But I appear several times. So obviously, I'm also older than the students. So there's the age power that comes in. There's the fact that I'm an artist in residency. There's the fact that my face is everywhere and all those little pamphlets and posters. And I think that recognizing this is already a first step into realizing how you present yourself to people. So with this, the concept of play in this case is that I think it's important for me to play with the concept of power and show it in a more accessible way. It's not because I show up with my image and the art that I do and my experience and everything that I'm not a genuine person. It's not because I have this knowledge and this confidence that I cannot laugh about myself. It's not because I come and I show up my work that I'm not able to see criticism live in front of me. And I think this is important. So this the concept of power and knowledge comes together, but I think it's important to be able to recognize the fact that I am me as a person, first of all, and that person have also insecurities and have doubts. And that's what I'm saying to the students. I'm like, you know, yeah, okay, I look confident. I am confident. That's fine. Because I'm able now to recognize my flaws and my quality and know how I can evolve and get better every day into a better version of me. But the concept of power in this case is really important to know, because when you realize it, when you realize clearly the image that you have, the power that you got, and the capacity that you have into pushing people to go to a certain direction when it comes to thinking, you have to also be super open and super vulnerable in order to make them be able to also take their power at that moment.
Because I bet if you walked in with a different sort of feeling where some people could, you will shut down the room in an instant.
Well, especially with the topics that I'm talking about. I'm talking about identity. I'm talking about
gender.
Prejudice. Yeah. I'm talking about gender. Like, this is super universal as a subject. Because in a way, I realized that no matter what we do, no matter the amount of money we make, the skin color, the gender, everything, we all question our identity. We're all human at this point. And I found myself doing the most universal work I could ever be creating, and this is from the least universal person you could imagine, you know?
Aren't we all that way, right? We're just this essence, right?
Exactly. But the thing is that that's what I'm finding super fascinating, is that with the subject that I'm talking about, if I didn't have this very light and easygoing ways, and just being able to laugh about myself and just say, oops, you know what, oops, sorry, I said a bad word, I apologize for that, or something like this, or when I don't know how to say a word or something, I just ask the question. It may sound ridiculous, but this is actually makes me vulnerable. Because if I show up with a very bougie attitude, looking at the student down, being like, okay, listen, kids, I have the knowledge, you don't, and I am going to tell you how it works. Obviously, the students will be like, who this man is? I am not going to talk to him. I don't like the attitude. And I sincerely believe that that comes from a concept of genuine confidence, and also this whole idea of embracing who you are and also recognizing and understanding the image that you project.
So being aware of your position or power within every interaction.
Exactly. Therefore, when you do this, you realize that when someone had when someone has a bad reaction about me being my image, I stopped taking it personally. Because obviously I'm a North African man and I'm bearded right now because I need my beard from some photos. But the beard on a Middle Eastern man, on a North African man, can be perceived as a dangerous man. Therefore, some people have, well, you know, some people need to be a little bit educated. So they see me and they change sidewalks and they get out of the elevator. But instead of being, oh my God, those people hate me. No, they don't hate me. They just don't appreciate my image. And that has nothing to do with me.
That's really something to, I think about, you know, what we carry with us, and some of those reactions might be things that we don't even think about we are doing. Like, you mentioned the person who walks across the street,
or change the side of her bag or his bag. That happened to me so many times. Someone comes in the elevator and I'm there and, oh, okay, so the bag goes from the left one to the right one in order to be less accessible. But I remember when I was younger, I was so offended by this, but now I'm actually smiling about it and being like, oh my God, your bag is so gorgeous. You know what I mean? And just like switch
the
whole situation. Exactly. But what I mean is that there are two ways of taking this. Either I'm being mad by this, or I'm creating a situation where I can exchange with people.
And
I took the second one.
And if everybody can think about, well, what do you want to carry with you for the rest of the day, right? Do you want to carry that mad? No, nobody wants to do that.
It's emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Being angry is so emotionally draining.
Mm-hmm.
And being nice and open is actually way more easy. And that's what happened to me when I took the plane to come here. A man sat next to me and we started discussing, and pretty fast he went into like a very sensitive topic and went for politics. And then he started asking me about my sexual orientation and everything. And it kind of, how can I say this? He didn't mean it in a wrong way, but it could have sound like super rude for some people.
Right.
And actually, instead of being mad, I just answered all his questions. I was like, well, are you ready? Like, okay. And we just went on and we discussed, I think, for an hour and a half. And by then, it was like, thank you so much. I'm going to keep this discussion with me for a long time. And you're intriguing, but hey, thank you. And we hugged it out, and he left. And I think what could have been totally a situation that could have turned into like a really cold trip and kind of argument-ish discussion became actually a super interesting discussion.
I have had such a fascinating time. I think we could do 2 hours of talking. There's so, and
oh my God, we already did this for 55 minutes?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know, and I have a whole list of questions we didn't even get to, which is, you know, that's a good conversation when we just talk about some of the things. But and I really appreciate the way that you approach conversations and ideas and help people to break down some of that discomfort. I think that's key, and it's just been wonderful, and I hope people will join you tonight.
I hope so too. But you know, I'm an artist, so I love to listen to myself talk.
But you have lots of great things to say, so it comes from a place of you know, I think that it's a good example, and
thank you.
That's an important part. So, folks, if you want to come to the Northfield Arts Guild tonight at 5 o'clock for High Heels, November 2nd, and if you're out about town and about 5:30, you see folks walking up to the library. That's what's going on. Or walking from the library up to Carlton at the White Center.
And you can hear us because the high heels will make some pretty noise.
That will be a sight. But it's one that hopefully prompts you to ask questions, be curious, and support people who are exploring all these wonderful things about being human.
Exactly.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I really, really will have to have more conversations. Maybe you'll come back to Northfield and then you'll come on the show again.
Definitely.
Good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Folks, this is Art Zany Radio for the Imagination. I want to remind you one time about a couple of events happening. Last week, my guests were from the production of Our Town by Thornton Wilder happening at the Northfield High School Auditorium. So I hope that you will support them in their play as they celebrate, I think it's 80 years of the play Our Town. So I want to thank my guests from last week. That show runs for 2 weekends, Friday and Saturday at 7:30, and then Sunday, November 11th at 2 o'clock. Tickets are $6 for adults and $4 for students. And I'll remind you to make sure that you take some time to go out, explore your imagination, and always remember to add some Art Zany to your life. In the meantime, till next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.